And this is The Inner Side, but it's not Scooter. This is Gordon Anderson sitting in for Scooter tonight. Oh. Stay tuned.
It's a story of a place called Mouseland. Mouseland was a place where all the little mice lived and played, were born and died, and they lived much as you and I do. They even had a parliament. And every 4 years they had an election. They used to walk to the polls and cast their ballot. Some of them even got a ride to the polls. Got a ride for the next 4 years afterwards, too. Just like you and me. And every time on election day, all the little mice used to go to the ballot box and they used to elect a government. A government made up of big, fat, black cats. Now, if you think it's strange that mice should elect a government made up of cats, you just look at the history of Canada for the last 90 years, and maybe you'll see that they weren't any stupider than we are. Now, I'm not saying anything against the cats. They were nice fellows. They conducted the government with dignity. They passed good laws. That is, laws that were good for cats. But the laws that were good for cats weren't very good for mice. One of the laws said that mouse holes had to be big enough so a cat could get his paw in. Another law said that mice could only travel at certain speeds so that a cat could get his breakfast without too much physical effort. All the laws were good laws for cats, but oh, they were hard on the mice. And life was getting harder and harder. And when the mice couldn't put up with it anymore, they decided something had to be done about it. So they went en masse to the polls. They voted the black cat out. And they put in the white cat. The white cat had put up a terrific campaign. They said all that Mouseland needs is more vision. They said the trouble with Mouseland is those round mouse holes we've got. If you put us in, we'll establish square mouse holes. And they did. And the square mouse holes were twice as big as the round mouse holes. And now the cat could get both his paws in. And life was tougher than ever. And when they couldn't take that anymore, they voted the white cats out and put the black ones in again. And then they went back to the white cats, and then to the black cats. They even tried half black cats and half white cats. And they called that coalition. They even got one government made up of cats with spots on them. They were cats that tried to make a noise like a mouse, but they ate like a cat. You see, my friends, the trouble wasn't with the color of the cat. The trouble was that they were cats. And because they were cats, they naturally looked after cats instead of mice. Presently, there came along one little mouse who had an idea. My friends, watch out for the little fellow with an idea. And he said to the other mice, look, fellas, why do we keep on electing a government made up of cats? Why don't we elect a government made up of mice? Oh, they said, he's a Bolshevik. Lock him up. So they put him in jail. But I want to remind you that you can lock up a mouse or a man, but you can't lock up an idea.
Portrayals are over here. What for anything?
And I tried hard to be proud of my service, but all I could feel was shame. The racism could no longer mask the reality of the occupation. These were people. These were human beings. I've since been plagued by guilt anytime I see an elderly man, like the one who couldn't walk, who we rolled onto a stretcher and told the Iraqi police to take him away. I feel guilt anytime I see a mother with her children, like the one who cried hysterically and screamed that we are worse than Saddam as we forced her from her home. I feel guilt anytime I see a young girl, like the one I grabbed by the arm and dragged into the street. We were told we were fighting terrorists. The real terrorist was me, and the real terrorism is this occupation. Racism within the military has long been an important tool to justify the destruction and occupation of another country. It has long been used to justify the killing, subjugation, and torture of another people. Racism is a vital weapon employed by this government. It is a more important weapon than a rifle, a tank, a bomber, or a battleship. It is more destructive than an artillery shell, or a bunker buster, or a Tomahawk missile. While those weapons are created and owned by this government, they are harmless without people willing to use them. Those who send us to war do not have to pull a trigger or lob a mortar round. They do not have to fight the war, they merely have to sell the war. They need a public who is willing to send their soldiers into harm's way. They need soldiers who are willing to kill and be killed without question. They can spend millions on a single bomb, but that bomb only becomes a weapon when the ranks in the military are willing to follow orders to use it. They can send every last soldier anywhere on earth, but there will only be a war if soldiers are willing to fight. And the ruling class, the billionaires who profit from human suffering, care only about expanding their wealth, controlling the world economy. Understand that their power lies only in their ability to convince us that war, oppression, and exploitation is in our interest. They understand that their wealth is dependent on their ability to convince the working class to die to control the market of another country. And convincing us to kill and die is based on their ability to make us think that we are somehow superior. Soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen have nothing to gain from this occupation. The vast majority of people living in the U.S. have nothing to gain from this occupation. In fact, not only do we have nothing to gain, but we suffer more because of it. We lose limbs, endure trauma, and give our lives. Our families have to watch flag-draped coffins lowered into the earth. Millions in this country without health care, jobs, or access to education must watch this government squander over $450 million a day on this occupation. Poor and working people in this country are sent to kill poor and working people in another country to make the rich richer. And without racism, soldiers would realize that they have more in common with the Iraqi people than they do with the billionaires who send us to war. I threw families onto the street in Iraq, only to come home and find families thrown onto the street in this country, in this tragic and unnecessary foreclosure crisis. We need to wake up and realize that our real enemies are not in some distant land. They're not people whose names we don't know and cultures we don't understand. The enemy is people we know very well and people we can identify. The enemy is a system that wages war when it's profitable. The enemy is the CEOs who lay us off from our jobs when it's profitable. It's the insurance companies who deny us health care when it's profitable. It's the banks who take away our homes when it's profitable. Our enemy is not 5,000 miles away. They are right here at home. If we organize and fight with our sisters and brothers, we can stop this war, we can stop this government, and we can create a better world.
First kick it up was when I hit the ground. You end up like a dog that's been beat too much. Do you spend every life just to cover it up? I was born in the USA. I was born in the USA. I got a little hometown jam. So they put a rifle in my hands, send me off to a foreign land to go and kill the yellow man. I was born in the USA. I was born in the USA. Come back home to the refinery. Our man says, son, if it was up to me, I went down to see my VA man. He said, son, don't you understand now? I had a brother at Quezon fighting off a Viet Cong. They're still there, but he's all gone. He had a woman he loved in Saigon. I got a picture of him in her arms now. Shadow the penitentiary, out by the gas fires of the refinery. I'm 10 years, I'm 15 years, I'm 25 years burning down the road. I got nowhere to run now. I was born in the USA. I was born in the USA. I was born in the USA. I'm a long gone, long gone daddy now.
The trails are open.
You're left for it.
I want to move to another subject, the war in Iraq. You have called upon Democrats to impeach President Bush, describing him and his administration as a group of killers and liars. What do you make of this war from the start until now?
First of all, I've been to Iraq. I met with Saddam Hussein. I never agreed with his war with Iran. But I know that when he was in power, Sunni and Shia never murdered each other, except under the instigation of the CIA, that in 1991 and even before, the CIA stirred up enmity, the Shia in the south, the Kurds in the north. Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction. He was no threat to his neighbors. If he were a lion, as I said on Sunday, he had no teeth and his paws had no claws. He never shot down one American or British plane that flew all over Iraq in 12 years. Iraq had lost the power to protect their own sovereignty in the air. So when America went to war with Iraq and called it shock and awe and dropped that kind of armament on Iraq, that's murder. To get to the oil of Iraq, to put in a democracy, that's lying and murder. Call it just like it is. And the murder went on. 1.5 million Iraqis died, according to the UN and the World Health Organization, from sanctions. And Madeleine Albright said the price was worth it. So Arabs don't mean anything. Kurds don't mean anything to America. Your life means nothing. Over 600,000, according to Johns Hopkins University, civilians have died in the last 4 years, and that means nothing. These are murderers. And if you were not at each other's throat before they came in, then you got to examine them and what they did. It is anti-Islamic to bomb a mosque. So what Muslim who studies the Quran would bomb a mosque, whether it's Shia or Sunni or Sufi or Hanafi or Hanbali? No Muslim will destroy even a synagogue, a cloister, or a church, much less bomb another mosque. Where's the hand of Mossad in all of this? Where's the hand of the CIA in all of this? I didn't misdescribe the administration of the United States. They are liars and they are murderers, and they are guilty of high crimes, and they should be set down, for they have violated the Constitution of the United States of America and have violated the peoples of the world.
So you accuse the Mossad actually of playing a role in Iraq now?
I didn't say they did, but I just raised the question. The hand is too dirty. The hand is too filthy. They may have played a part. They're there. The CIA is there. Who's benefiting from this? The destruction of Muslims. Who's benefiting? I don't think Muslims are benefiting. Somebody else is benefiting from our slaughter of each other and giving Islam a bad name throughout the whole world. No, this is insanity, and it must cease.
Portrayals are over here.
Any advice for these young people over here for starting out in the press corps?
Go for it. They'll never be unhappy. You'll always keep people informed, and you'll always keep learning. The greatest thing of the profession is never stop learning.
Today they're covering the Jewish Heritage Month.
Meet the president.
Any comments on Israel? We're asking everybody today. Any comments?
Tell them to get the hell out of Palestine.
Ooh. Any better comments?
Remember, these people are occupied, and it's their land. It's not German. It's not Poland.
So where should they go? What should they do?
They go home.
Where's the home?
Poland.
So the Jews,
Germany.
The Jews go back to Poland and Germany.
And America and everywhere else. Why push people out of there who had lived there for centuries? See?
Oh. Now, are you familiar with the history of that region and what took place?
Very much. I'm of Arab background.
I see.
Portrayals are over here. What?
We have now a very dangerous power vacuum. Those very values which the middle class cherishes no longer seem to have validity. Those very values which seem to hold the society together in a sort of a mythological umbilical cord, they have disappeared or are meaningless. And so many people are saying, give us somebody. Where is the white horse and the rider? Give us somebody that will pull us together. We can't do it with a used Ford. Give us somebody, some institution, some group. We're thirsting for names and leadership and faces. And at that moment, when that desire is that strong, that's when the horseback rider comes along. That's when Napoleon Premier is born. That's when the Third Reich came into being. We know now so much more about ourselves. We are no different than the Germans. 6 million Jews, 1 million Vietnamese. Is that a substantial difference? The utilization of endemic racism, to try to destroy an Asiatic people, north and south, east and west? Is that very different than Aryan supremacy and Jewish genocide? Are we different than the burghers of Leipzig and Stuttgart, who knew that somewhere the gas ovens were burning and somewhere the cattle cars were rolling? Are we so different from those people when we know so much what is done in our name and oppose it so feebly, oppose it in the only way that will not jeopardize ourselves by adopting the recommendations of the system, that you don't attack it frontally and physically? You write to your congressman, and he will do it for you. Are we all so different than that? Are the Germans less moral people, less vicious? Are we incapable of excesses as horrendous as the Third Reich's? Of course we are. All you have to see is a rerun of the movie about the commons at Kent State, or the streets of Jackson, Mississippi, around Jackson State College, or My Lai 4, or Wounded Knee, or Attica. We don't have to go very far to see how easily we can become animals, and animals in the most derogatory sense of that word. And this is not done, I know now, by vicious, unprincipled people. It is done by people who pride themselves on their goodness and morality and decency, but who say, as they said in Germany and as they say here, we do it because we want to protect ourselves. What we are doing is right, because those who would disturb us must perforce be evil. And so, every day a revelation of what we will do to each other, whether it's the destruction intended of the Socialist Workers' Party, or the labyrinth of telephone wiretaps and intercepts, or the COINTEL program of the FBI to destroy by all means necessary the forces of black liberation in this country, or whether it's the perversion of the courts to crucify an Angela Davis or a Benjamin Spock or a Bobby Seale. We see it all around us. We know it is in operation. We tolerate it. And only a few even intend to verbalize their feeling about it. And yet lurking inside of us must be the same primordial forces of self-preservation that brought on Wounded Knee and D-Yard at Attica. These forces are so strong that they cannot be suppressed by anything short of totalitarianism. And even then, not forever. And yet, the counterbalance of self-protection by others who are not oppressed in the visible sense of the word, but who live in secret fear that the blacks will break out of Harlem and come down Park Avenue, that the American Indian will demand his and her due and threaten the false titles that were wrested from them when their treaties were broken 387 times in a row, and will begin open warfare on the haves by those who have, as one rather celebrated economist observed, only their chains to lose. We have an undercurrent of revolution. If we're in any posture, we're in a pre-revolutionary posture. And at the same time, we have you and millions like you who have been so traumatized by the seemingly uselessness of protest and struggle, the seemingly useless attempt to attain a morality, so that you're slipping into the ashrams or into the graduate schools of the world. Anything to stay with clean and decent people as long as you can. And yet the oppressed are no less oppressed. The poor, no less poor. The hungry, no less hungry. In my way of thinking, there is only one way for people to live, and that is to struggle. It seems endless. Human beings get tired. Issues that seem once so clear and so golden become vague and tarnished. Yet there are those among us, and always have been, although the supply is not limitless, of those who will risk what Daniel Berrigan says is the risk of self-jeopardy, who will endure public risk, not for themselves, although you can't divorce the ego and other gratification, which is probably part of human life, but in some mystical way for everyone, and who are prepared to go down into the valley for their brothers and sisters.
The voices you heard were Iraqi war veteran Mike Preissner, Minister Louis Farrakhan, former White House correspondent Helen Thomas, and radical attorney William Kunstler. Again, this is Gordon Anderson sitting in for Scooter. And I'd like to let you know the theme of this was about war. And remember, the enemies of your freedoms are not overseas. The enemies of your liberties and freedoms are closer than you think.